Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now, he's a writer for MLB Pipeline. He's on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. It is Jonathan Mayo. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. We loved talking to you last time. It was weirdly enough, just ahead of Kelnick's debut, and later that day we got the news that Logan Gilbert would also be brought up. It was perfect timing, but because we didn't know that Logan Gilbert would be brought up, we didn't get a chance to talk about many of the other prospects. So we wanted to take a chance to kind of reflect on what we've seen from Kelnick so far and then look at a couple other guys. So I'll start with a big question, which is Kelnick obviously hasn't taken off the way fans were hoping, but maybe that's because of the expectations that are heaped onto a very young player. What have you seen from him? Is it in line with kind of the struggles you were expecting?
Yeah, you know, baseball's hard. So I'm not reading too much into it. It is, what, he's got 70-some at-bats. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's struggled. He's also shown glimpses of what he can do. You know, the power has shown up a little bit. He can run. He can do things in the outfield. I'm not too concerned. You know, it's one of those, I think it really jumps off the page because that's how he started out. But if he were an established veteran and went through a 19-game stretch where, you know, he didn't hit, no one would notice. So let him get his feet under him. This is a guy who plays, you know, like his hair is on fire all the time and wants nothing more than to help his team win. So he's probably pressing a little bit. The strikeout rate is a little higher, you know, than I think he'd want to see. And I think he's probably trying to do a little too much, but he's going to catch his breath and get his feet under him and start doing, you know, kind of what he's done throughout his pro career. And that's hit and hit for power and, you know, and show off all five tools that he has.
You know, Jonathan, it's great to hear you say that. At what point would you start to be concerned with Kelnick? Maybe not concerned, but start thinking that maybe sending him back down to the AAA level would be the appropriate move. Right now, last night they decided to take him out of the leadoff spot and put him in the seventh spot to try and you know, ease some of that pressure. When would that be appropriate in your mind?
I mean, for me, like 2023, you know, unless you really feel certain that the Mariners are definitely going to compete. First of all, I think they're better with him in the lineup. You know, so I think that they should ride it out. Now, if he's still hitting, you know, .120 and it's July, then maybe you think, you know what, go back down, catch your breath, and then come back. You know, sort of the Taylor Trammell route. You know, but I'm really not too worried about it. I think he's going to figure it out, you know, and, you know, a month from now, if we're talking again, I think we're going to be talking about how, you know, how productive he's being. So I'm really not concerned, and I wouldn't want to put any sort of timetable on that. Just go and let him play. And, you know, if it's a net negative and you're worried about it, like getting in his head, then maybe, but he's such a confident young man that I really think that he understands that there was going to be some he's not really faced. He is, I think we even touched on it the last time I was on, the one thing that he said that he hasn't had to deal with is this.
Yeah.
So let's see how he deals with it, and I think he's going to deal with it just fine.
Jonathan, we didn't get to ask you a ton about Gilbert. I know we talked about him last time, but neither Jake nor myself were expecting like an hour after we talked to you for him to be announced as the starter the following day. I was shocked. I think I messaged you after and was like, why? Why didn't we have you on an hour after? So I just wanted to kind of reflect so far on not just, you know, kind of your expectations for what he can be with the Mariners, but similar question for Kelnick, whether what you've seen is kind of consistent with what you thought a normal trajectory for him would look like.
Well, first of all, I want to let listeners like understand that just because I'm on now does not mean that some other top prospect's going to get called up as soon as we hang up.
You guys, in an hour, Cal Raleigh is going to be making his debut, and I have to let you know this happens. When we have
really
Jonathan Mayo on, we have major roster news.
I was going to go George Kirby, maybe, George. Emerson Hancock. He went all the way down.
Yeah, okay.
You know, listen, I think overall it's kind of been what, you know, what you would want to, what you would want to see. I think he's starting to settle in a little bit. You know, that first start was a little rough where he probably was just catching too much of the strike zone. You know, then, the first two outings. And then I think each one from there has gotten a little bit better, not walking guys. He's starting to miss more bats. You know, his last start, when he went six, you know, and gave up two, I think he's going to settle into that kind of pattern. And they're going to be more of the good variety where he gives up less or goes deeper, as he starts to figure out big league hitters' tendencies. You know, one of the things that was impossible to quantify with anybody, but particularly, you know, for a pitcher, is that, you know, this is a guy, you know, he hadn't pitched right last year at all. I think had last year been a normal year, he would have probably pitched his way to the big leagues, but he'd only had nine starts above A ball before this year. And you can talk about whatever the alt site was, and it was useful and he worked very hard, but it's not the same as facing big league competition under the lights and things like that. So there's going to be a learning curve. And I think he's already shortened that curve quite a bit. And I think, you know, what you saw with his last start, you're going to see a lot more of that as things go on.
Now, going back to Taylor Trammell, he's getting the call up, obviously, due to the unfortunate news that Kyle Lewis suffered a partially torn meniscus. But he's been tearing the cover off the ball down there at the AAA level. You know, what is that process like to go from being called up to the major leagues, coming back down, now coming back up? What is the realistic expectations for somebody like that? And would it be any kind of surprise or shock to you to see him eventually come back down if Kyle Lewis is able to get healthy?
Yeah, I think that, you know, players can go one of two ways, right? When they get sent down, they could sulk about it and kind of be angry and think, well, you didn't really give me a fair shake. Or you can have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder and say, I'm going to do everything I can to get myself in a position to get called up. Now, it is very unfortunate that it's because of an injury to Kyle Lewis, but he put himself in the position to be that guy because of how ridiculously hot he was in AAA and pretty much right out of the gate. He's like, I'm going to start hitting. And, you know, showed that the power is still very much for real. I think, you know, he's not going to hit like he'd been hitting in AAA in the big leagues because, like, who can do that? That was insane. I mean, the guy hit 460 in a second week and his average came down. But, but you know, he has all the tools and it's just a question of him putting together. And kind of like with Logan Gilbert, you know, this is a guy who had, you know, not played above AA. And his AA season in 2019 was kind of up and down, finished well. My dog is very excited about Taylor Trammell.
huge
fan. We may rename him Trammell. I think, again, it's like, I'm not going to call Taylor Trammell Mike Trout ever, but Mike Trout struggled his first time up, went back down and said, okay, I'm not going to let that happen again. Now I'm ready.
You know, Jonathan, there was an interesting report out there from John Morosi saying that Taylor Trammell, the way that he's playing, he could be somebody that could draw a lot of interest from major league teams out there. Was he playing that well down in AAA where he became a player that major league clubs would target if they were in need of an outfielder in particular?
Because the guy hasn't been traded enough, right? I think that, you know, it's a small sample size. You know, we're talking 17 games, so I wouldn't go too crazy. I think, though, that if you're someone who always had interest, and one of the reasons why Trammell's been traded, you know, a few times now is because the tools are very intriguing with some feel for the game. Now, maybe he doesn't have quite as high a ceiling as we thought, but he's still young. And if you believe that what you saw in AAA is him really starting to put those tools into action, particularly the power, more consistently, then yeah, sure, I think there would be interest. Or they could just decide that someone else, you know, that they, the Mariners may decide that Trammell is the guy they want in the outfield and someone else could become, a trade target. I don't know who from that outfield that would be. But, you know, he certainly didn't hurt himself. I wouldn't put too much weight into, you know, just over 2 weeks of AAA games and played in May.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey. We're speaking with Jonathan Mayo of MLB Pipeline, giving us kind of a recap of what we've seen from these prospects who have made their debuts and then what to look forward to. Jonathan, if I'm taking kind of a broader view of the Mariners farm system right now, we've here at the station been talking about Cal Raleigh quite a bit, just assuming maybe he's one of the next guys. But who's another guy that fans should be pretty excited to see debut potentially this year?
So you're setting me up now. People are going to expect that Cal Raleigh is going to get called up.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right. I like Cal Raleigh a lot. You know, obviously, given his position, it's really going to depend on need or opening at the big league level. You can't, like, necessarily force an opening for you know, this is a guy who has hit in some ways better than expected, especially power-wise, and is off to a good start this year. And, you know, the catching has always been pretty good. In some ways, he's kind of flipped, you know, what he was. But the receiving is very good. He throws well enough. Like, this is a guy who has a chance to be an everyday catcher in the big league. So if there is a need for that, he would be the guy at the upper levels who, you know, probably would generate the most interest to get called up. And even if it's call him up to, you know, still in a back, you know, backup role for the time being. He is a guy who has a chance to be your one guy rather than your two guy.
Logan Gilbert was part of that trio of right-handed pitchers that DePoto has selected. Are we expecting to see another one of those, either Hancock or Kirby, debut this year as well?
You know, I would never say never. I think it's unlikely. You know, it's shocking that George Kirby actually walked a batter, so I think they need to slow him down. It's literally one walk in 31 and two-thirds career innings. But he's going to move pretty quickly. You know, the fact that they started him in high A rather than double A, I think they're trying to slow that a little bit. You know, keeping in mind that 2019 draftee, he pitched a tiny bit during his pro debut in short season ball. That's been it. You know, so could he help out? You know, let's say they're competing and they need some extra help in September. Sure, I think that's possible. You know, these are the first professional pitches he's ever thrown. Again, he's been very good, but the fact that he's pitching, what, three innings at a clip on average, like, they're bringing him along slowly also. Mm-hmm. I think they're really monitoring their workloads for good reason. So I think 2022 is probably more likely, you know, with Kirby, you know, a half step ahead of Hancock just because, you know, he's been around for longer. He had an extra professional offseason to work on things. All of them have gotten much, much better, sort of with Logan Gilbert as their leader. So it wouldn't shock me if they started moving quickly. I just think that teams, not just the Mariners, have to be very careful with workloads for starting pitchers this year after the bizarre nature of the 2020 season.
He is Jonathan Mayo of MLB Pipeline, and as promised, every time he joins us, we get major Mariners news, so I'll be keeping my eyes peeled. Nothing yet. I mean, coast is clear so far, but you never know. Obviously, you guys can always find his work at MLB Pipeline, but I do encourage you to follow him directly. Many of you are, but if you are not already, at Jonathan Mayo. Tons of good stuff there, and it's especially relevant for the Mariners who are in this rebuild with plenty of guys to keep an eye on in the minors still. Jonathan, it is always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan.
All right. It is time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right, Jake, first down to you. Who are the three young players on defense for the Seahawks who have to step up this season?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a player for every level of the defense. Number one, I'm going to go to a first-round pick in L.J. Collier. The reason why I'm picking L.J. Collier as a player that has to step up this season is because it's going to be vital. If they do not bring on another defensive tackle, that means they're relying on L.J. Collier to really utilize his skill set as both a five technique and the potential as a defensive tackle, a three technique to be a backup to Puna Ford. So I believe there's going to be even more expectations, even more opportunity for LJ Collier to see the field in that expanded role that he will play with Kerry Hyder Jr. being able to flex and do some of those things. So LJ Collier, I believe, has to step up this season and continue to keep improving. If he can improve and keep making those strides the way that he did in year two, I'll feel very encouraged by what he can eventually do in year three. Number two, another first round pick, Jordan Brooks. Jordan Brooks replacing KJ Wright at that will linebacker spot full time. No questions asked about it now. Can Jordan Brooks replace a legend, a stalwart of this defense, and do it right alongside Bobby Wagner and play at a high level? He showed he's capable of doing so in the second half of the season. I love the way that he was triggering, firing downhill, using his speed to attack the line of scrimmage, and he got better in pass coverage. But he is going to, if he can improve and he can show that he is worth that first round pick and can play next to Bobby Wagner at a high level, this will make the defense significantly better. And last but not least, DJ Reed. DJ Reed flashed last year. It was exciting to see him play with the type of energy, the type of swag, the type of confidence and playmaking ability that he displayed at the second half of the season. But they are going to have, DJ Reed is going to have to show and prove to the Seahawks that it was a smart move to walk away from Shaquille Griffin, and that DJ Reed can hold down one of the cornerback spots and let the competition play out on the other side of the ball. So those three guys to me are going to be key for them to step up for a full 17-game season. Weird to say 17 games, but a full 17-game season in order for this defense to truly become better.
Second down. Miss Ross.
Yes, DJ.
DK
Wilder.
DK Metcalf was on the Ringers NFL Show podcast yesterday. Is there anything that he said that Seahawks fans should know about?
Okay, now I don't want to do this as a version of, hey, I listened, so you don't have to. I actually love this podcast, and I recommend it, and I think the interview is pretty funny. Most of the interview, as a heads up, is just kind of fun questions like, hey, where would you want to travel? What's Russ like? And by the way, he says everything you see is just who he is. Like, that was maybe one of the things that surprised him most. It's like, nope, Russell really is that person that just walks out and says, like, okay, what are we going to do to win today? But one of the things that stood out most to me is also one of the things that I know I'm speaking for Jake, but also for myself, that we're most interested to explore this year into the regular season, which is what Shane Waldron looks like as offensive coordinator. So he is asked in this interview, hey, do you ever go back and like watch some of those Rams games over the years and think like, oh, we might be able to do that now, or like, what would this look like in our offense? And DK's like, yeah, and I'm summarizing the answer. He's kind of pressed on it. And I think that there is some excitement Seahawks fans should have listening to this interview, knowing that there may be some wholesale changes in some parts of the offense. And I think that a lot of what's been assumed with the way this team is that they do things their own way. And I think that's always true. But I think that some of the creativity that fans have been calling for, at least from this interview, I feel like you're going to start seeing some of it in the offense.
Third down. Jake, do you expect the Seahawks to make a free agent signing this month?
You know, I really feel like at this point the Seahawks are very comfortable with where they are, and I believe that the free agent market isn't necessarily going to heat up in the month of June. I think we're going to see a lot of teams wait this process out all the way through training camp. So a name that keeps popping up is a guy like Geno Atkins, a defensive tackle that was a teammate with Carlos Dunlap for years and years. They were just absolutely making hay at the... They were absolutely getting after the quarterback. And so I think that when you look at somebody like Geno Atkins, who is older, past his prime, could he be there at a veteran minimum deal heading into training camp or just before the season? I think so. So therefore, I don't think that that you're going to see a major free agent signing this month. I think that the Seahawks are going to continue to be patient, continue to wait out the process, unless there was a trade opportunity that they just could not pass up.
Fourth down. All right, Jake, what is your biggest concern for Jamal Adams in 2021?
Honestly, my biggest concern for Jamal Adams is his health. And it's not something, and I want to make this very clear, this is not something that Jamal Adams has had to deal with for the majority of his career. This was a unique year for Jamal Adams. His first two seasons in the NFL, extremely healthy, played all his games, was never really hurt at all. And then you get into year three, and man, it was just a rough year. He had his shoulders that he was dealing with. He had fingers, and I'm sure multiple other things that he was battling through. But to me, in order for this trade to be successful for the Seahawks, for you to get the most impact out of Jamal Adams, he has got to be healthy. He has got to be available for this team. And in order for this defense to be better than what expectations are, to be better than what Stacey Ross thinks that this defense will eventually be, I think that Jamal Adams is the biggest key to the equation. When he was healthy, when he was comfortable in this defense, when he was playing assignment sound, this defense got better. They played better. They played faster. They played more physical. They were more sound in pass coverage. Jamal Adams has to be on the field, and I am very concerned about this defense without Jamal Adams on the field. So my concern, I think he'll get better at, in his pass coverage. I think that overall he will improve from a year ago when he set the league record for defensive backs in sacks. I think that he will continue to keep being disruptive. But it's his health that is my biggest concern, my biggest worry, because they have to have him on the field.
Very fair. A very fair concern, and also a fair evaluation of what he can be to this offense when healthy. I did the Family Feud good answer thing, didn't I? I got to get out of that
habit.
Yes,
you did.
I got to get out of it. You guys remember Firefest? Do you remember when there was that festival that Ja Rule and Billy What's-His-Face, some random like scam artist, it was going to be this huge festival, models were going to be there, it was going to be the time of your life, you could swim with pigs in the ocean and listen to like Blink-182, and it was all a sham, like they never had the funds to actually put this on. And it started becoming a viral sensation when people were posting pictures of the food. Like it started with that, kind of, and the food was like a slice of Wonder Bread and cheese for like a $10,000 ticket, and people were horrified. Something very similar just happened. It doesn't have to do anything with the music festival or Ja Rule so far, but it does have to do with another team in the AL West. That's coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. I'm Stacey Rust. He's Jake Heaps, taking you through the timeline. That means it's the top stories you've probably seen on your own timeline. And if you haven't already, we're going to tell you what you missed. This is what you need to know in the world of sports outside of Seattle. So we'll start with this one. There were photos circulating of the A's minor league meals that were leaked, and they very much remind me of Firefest pics. If you guys have never seen the Firefest pics, it's when people posted photos from the Firefest, whatever, that like huge sham concert that was put on. And these were supposed to be like all-inclusive meals and everything was supposed to be fantastic. And instead, they got basically like two slices of Wonder Bread and Kraft cheese. And it was trash. So I know that the minor leagues are not being sold as a wonderful festival. In fact, they are notoriously paid very little money and tough living conditions. Now, credit to the A's for this, not for the initial food vendor situation, but credit them for at least responding. The president of the A's called it unacceptable. He said they ended their contract with that food vendor, and they actually had done that a couple weeks ago, and these pictures were from a couple weeks ago. So they were from mid-May, and they just happened to be kind of going viral right now. But, I have two things to say about this. One, these are the athletes, and most of them will not make it to your big leagues, but these are your employees, essentially. They're also employees of the minor league teams. It's complicated, but it's not a lot to ask that you treat them better than you're already treating them. And secondly, I am so sick and tired, Jake, of the fan reaction to stuff like this being like, well, they're athletes, you know. You're going to get paid millions of dollars. First of all, a lot of them will not get paid millions of dollars. And if you think that they don't deserve to be treated better or even just get better food than your high schooler is getting at their school because they're in the minors and they're signing up to play baseball, guess what? A lot of jobs aren't that important. A lot of jobs people are just doing because it's entertaining or fun or provides some kind of excitement to people's lives. Like, unless you're a doctor or a nurse or like some kind of other first responder or doing something really important, there are a lot of jobs, including jobs outside of sports, where people are just trying to chase a dream. And why would you belittle someone for kind of speaking out about being in a situation where they're being mistreated in that job?
Yeah, it's an absolute joke. Now, Stacey, I don't know if you remember this or know this, but I played for a league called the FXFL after I got cut from the Jets. And I lived in Brooklyn, New York. We played games at a minor league park. The Cyclones is where it is in Coney Island. We played our games on a baseball field. There was a turf field. All that right next to the amusement park pier down there at Coney Island. And the food we got there, which was greasy pasta and pizza and barbecued wings and just all this terrible food that we should not be putting in our bodies at all, trying to be high-performance athletes, they fed us terribly. And yet they fed us significantly better than what the A's minor league team was getting fed. And that can never be okay. That is never right. No matter how you spin it, no matter how you try to go about it, that is wrong. And if you're advocating for the opposite, then you probably need to, you know, look yourself in the mirror. But this to me is, look, minor league players, there already is a discrepancy in the pay that they receive.
Huge discrepancy.
But the least that you can do is at least give them the amenities. At least give them the food, the fueling. That to me is a bare minimum. And to me, this is a story that just blows my mind. But it brought me back to those days, Stacey, of, you know, being in Brooklyn, New York, being in Coney Island, just eating terribly, and you know, being in some hole in the wall hotel for a couple months while I was trying to go through this season. Man, it was an experience, to say the least.
Also, like, can we? I'm getting so many texts right now that, Stacey, I have to buy my own lunch, guys. I promise you, a lot of us are probably being paid more than minor league players. Like, there are minor league players that are getting, like, what? Would you say $15,000 a year? Sometimes less than that?
Yeah, a lot of them have been having to, like, drive, like, Uber in the off-season stuff.
To make money. Yeah, this is not... A lot of them do not have necessarily, like, livable wages. But they're giving up a lot of that. Housing together, housing with, what are they called? Host families, essentially. So that they can chase this dream. This thing that they really want to do. I feel like it's not a lot to ask that we are able to empathize with them advocating for themselves.
Like, absolutely.
Why are we shaming anyone for doing this?
Correct. And then also in Major League Baseball, don't make a bunch of cuts to minor league players saying that this is in turn to provide better salaries, better amenities for our minor leaguers, and then not follow through on that. That to me is just a very, very poor look. And obviously, credit to the A's. They did say that, look, they fired this vendor, that they did move on. This is unacceptable. They spoke out against this. But still, for it to happen at all is just simply unacceptable.
Let's talk about something else that's incredibly unacceptable. Countertop food. Now, a while ago, this is, a couple weeks ago, Jake, countertop spaghetti was making its rounds, where someone was putting a bunch of pasta on a counter, a kitchen counter, covering it with Prego, of all sauces, and then mixing it together. It's
What's
disgusting.
Wrong with Prego?
It's nothing. It's the entire point of countertop food is to just be a viral trend and have people retweet it and say, oh, gross, disgusting. But I'm tired of it. Like, I'm tired of this trend. I don't like it. And there's another one that's out where someone is putting down peanut butter on the counter and then hazelnut spread, jelly, sprinkles, bananas, pickles, and then putting bread on top of it and making it a sandwich.
This has gone too far.
That's what I'm saying. It's a sickness.
This has gone way too far. And I don't know who would do this. Only a monster would do this, and it has to stop. You're right. You're 100% right. This has to stop. And I'm just going to be curious to see what they're going to try to pass off next. That, oh, it's this great idea to put all this food, just slab it on your countertops, on your kitchen, make this giant mess. And we're going backwards, Stacey. There's all sorts
we're
of utensils for us
devolving.
To come. We are devolving. I don't understand it. Why are we wanting to
for
go
the clout.
Backwards?
For the clout, Jake. for the clout.
All for the clout. All for the clout.
All right. One of my favorite games to play. We do this every Wednesday. It is called Hype Train, and it's coming your way next. We're going to need you guys to join in on this one, so get ready to text in to the Mac and Jack's text line 710-710. I'll tell you how to play next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. It's time for Hype Train. Let's go ahead and head to the station, DJ, while I explain how this all works. So I am going to tell you guys one of the big conversations, the big trends happening in sports, and you are going to tell me whether you're buying in, whether you think it's more than just hype, you think it's real, you're boarding, or whether you're going to let it go on by, meaning you disagree or you think this trend is all just hype. So it'll make a little more sense as we play through. Jake is going to answer first. DJ, I'll turn to you later and I'll give my answer as well. So let's get started with this first train. New Falcons head coach Arthur Smith says, quote, "We'll see," when asked whether or not Julio Jones will be at Atlanta's mandatory minicamp next week. Here is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Julio is with the Falcons through the month of June.
Wow. Through the month of
through
June.
Through the month of June.
I'm going to get on this board. I'm going to get on this train, actually. Sound it up, DJ. I'm getting on this hype train. Why? Because I think that teams are having a really hard time looking at Julio Jones at his age and the price tag of $15 million that they would have to inherit in the first year of Julio Jones's deal. That's a lot to take on for any team, even if you're a team that is desperate for a weapon like the Tennessee Titans are right now. They are a team that makes a ton of sense to be willing to take that on. The 49ers are a team that makes sense as well in terms of their cap space, Kyle Shanahan's relationship and familiarity with Julio Jones. But still, it's not necessarily the move that teams want to make, take on that type of money. So I think that what you're looking at, and what Brady Henderson of ESPN, our own Brady Henderson, reported on Twitter just a few minutes ago, saying that the Seahawks are monitoring the situation, but the one caveat for them to become very interested in Julio Jones would have to be for the Atlanta Falcons to be willing to eat some of the salary of Julio Jones like the Texans did with Jadeveon Clowney. I think you're going to have a lot of teams that feel very similarly, that are not going to be willing to give up a first-round pick. It'd be a second, maybe even a third. So I think that Julio Jones is going to continue to simmer here on the market longer than everybody was anticipating.
DJ.
Yeah, I'm also boarding this hype train for all the same reasons Jake just said. I think teams are going to wait for his trade value to go down. I think we're going to get into training camp, and I think he's still going to be technically on the Falcons, and it's going to be like a Clowney situation where he's not showing up. And I think the team will be able to snatch him up for maybe like a second or third round pick.
So weird. Imagine a couple years ago saying a team can maybe get a third round pick for Julio Jones. Who would have thought we'd be here? Very strange. I think I'm willing to board this train just because there's been little movement that we've heard about the Falcons getting much of an offer. We've heard that they allegedly got a first round pick in an offer. We've heard that the Seahawks have been kicking the tires there, but there's been no real movement. I think that the Falcons are going to want a lot more than some teams are willing to offer. I think Julio's salary makes it a bit of an obstacle, and I don't think that they move him soon unless they are willing to either come down on those picks or absorb some of that salary. All right, next train. MLB All-Star voting starts tomorrow. Here's the hype train jumping right into it. The Mariners will have 3 All-Stars this year.
Ooh, this is a good hype train here, Stacey. Why?
30th
because,
and OPS, so.
Because surprisingly, you've got 3 candidates on here that I think are legitimate in terms of their opportunity to become All-Stars, but I am not going to get on this hype train. Reason for that being is because I only believe that there's 2 All-Stars that you will have from the Mariners, which is pretty darn good. I believe Mitch Haniger will be an All-Star, and Kendall Graveman, him being out, I can't imagine we'll keep him out. I mean, he's been the best reliever in all of baseball when he's been out there. So I think Mitch Haniger and Kendall Graveman have a great chance to be All-Stars this season.
DJ.
Yeah, I think Joe Fan and I were just talking about this back here. Who would be the third and probably be Ty
Joe,
France?
Joe, stop distracting DJs. Focusing on Hype Train.
I think the third would be Ty France. And even if he keeps hitting, I don't think he's unfortunately a big enough name. So I think I'm not boarding this Hype Train. I think it will be Mitch Haniger. And you have to get Kendall Graveman in there. We got to get those 98 mile an hour sinkers in the All-Star game.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. I don't think it's going to be three either. You've got to give it to Mitch Haniger. Mitch Haniger is not just the best player on a pretty bad offense, but he's also one of the better players right now, at least as far as what the league really cares about. Let's be real, it's home runs for hitters. He's got 14, which is tied for sixth, right? I mean, the only names above him are guys that are clearly going to be all-stars. It's Fernando Tatis, it's Shohei Ohtani, it's Ronald Acuna. I mean, he has been fantastic. I don't know how you keep him out of there. I don't know who else outside of maybe Graveman really gets added to that list. And I think the Mariners really struggling, sitting well into the bottom of the league in almost every offensive category is going to mean that even if players do start improving, they're probably going to be overlooked. Next train. LeBron James is catching heat for exiting 5 minutes early in the Suns' blowout win over the Lakers last night. It was reportedly to get treatment. So here's the hype train. Listen carefully to this one. It was okay for LeBron James to leave last night's game 5 minutes early for that.
Like, for real? This is
yes,
a hype train?
Yes, that's the hype train.
That's the hype train that you're presenting to me right
rules,
now?
And that's the hype train that I have put on the tracks.
Are you kidding me, Stacey
no.
Rost? Let that train go right on by, because what LeBron James did last night was a joke. That, to me, was as soft gets. And it wasn't leadership. It wasn't a demonstration of, oh, how tough LeBron is. Oh, LeBron is so angry and so upset, he's going to send a message to his team. That is a load of garbage. And I think that LeBron doing that just confirms also, and this is coming from somebody that's been a fan of LeBron James on the court for years, have admired, have appreciated his game, have not been a hater of LeBron James on the court whatsoever. But what he did in that moment, after you just got absolutely blown out, Anthony Davis is gone, you talk trash before the game saying, this is what these shoulders were built for, and then you get smoked by 30 points, and then you walk out of the floor before the game is even over with 5 minutes remaining in the game? Absolute garbage. No, it was not okay for him to do that last night.
DJ?
Yeah. I'm not boarding this hype train either.
You're going to stay on the platform of the train station with a fuming Jake Heaps?
Yes.
He's so mad
yes.
right now. He's just going to be knocking vending machines over.
It's just that quote that Jake pointed out too. It's just the fact that he says this is what these shoulders are built for. And then you come out and, like, I think LeBron had a decent game, but, I mean, they were just so awful last night, and then you're the leader of the team and you just leave. I'm not buying the treatment excuse, and it's just not a good look, especially to go down 3-2 in the series in the first round. Not a good look.
Yeah, I am also normally a LeBron fan, and I am a LeBron fan. I didn't think this was the right thing to do. There was a quote that was something like, well, it's not going to make him any better if he sits there for 5 minutes not getting treatment. And it's like, well, look, the 5 minutes, how big of a difference does that make if he stays there even while your team is getting blown out? It looks like giving
makes
up on your
no
team.
No difference
it looks
whatsoever.
Like giving up on your team.
No difference whatsoever. And I'm getting attacked by the surprising Laker contingency here. Even our own Christian isn't too happy with me. Well, I'm sorry. The Lakers aren't winning in seven, Christian. They're not.
Wow,
LeBron, they
Jacob.
Got smoked last night. Absolutely smoked. Anthony Davis is not returning. The groin injury and everything that he is dealing with right now, those are legit injuries. That is something serious, and I don't think that they have enough firepower to be able to get it done. I think the Suns move on and advance.
Oh, Jake, my Phoenix Suns, which many
no, Stacey,
hype trains
not.
Ago, I said were going to be one of the better teams.
You didn't know that the Phoenix Suns even were good.
I did. Yes, I did. Jake,
no, Stacey,
I knew that
you
they
have
were good.
To stay with your original team, which is, actually is looking pretty good for you right now in terms of the Brooklyn
All
Nets.
All my teams
you,
have looked good because I changed it every week.
That's not how this works. You can't
it
just keep changing your teams.
I'm like Drake. I'm just going to go with, like, yeah, whatever player. What player would I hang out with? We could all hang out together and watch this
Stacey,
game.
Stacey, you also know that Drake carries a curse with him. Whoever he roots for ends up losing.
Well, That's all I have to say about that. Joe Fan is here of NBC Sports Northwest. He's going to be joining us next. We're going to have a really fun slash maybe frustrating conversation about Russell Wilson. I want to know whether you think that both his ceiling and floor have changed. Also, watching Dame Lillard take over last night reminded Jake of something. That's coming your way next.